The last thing I want to ask you about is sort of your overall perspective in terms of clinical research, laboratory research in breast cancer, and the overall direction that we're heading and how we're investing our resources and trying to solve this problem.
That's another terrific question. I don't think anybody, and certainly I don't consider myself, to have the sort of magical vision to know which is the exact perfect line of investigation to pursue. It's thrilling and exciting to go to cancer meetings these days and to see such a broad array of exciting activities, any one of which one could imagine having a specific transformative event on the disease. I think that's really exciting, whether or not you've spent your life doing angiogenesis or apoptosis or DNA repair or drug delivery. There's enough excitement and enough good work going on to imagine any of those approaches succeeding. I think some of the issues here are less intellectual in terms of barriers than they are political and economic. I think we are still a disaster as a nation and as a world in putting patients on study. I think it's extraordinarily unfortunate that so few patients, even to this date, participate in trials. I am deeply concerned about the substantial reduction in the federal budgets. Despite the major funding spent by pharmaceutical companies, I think the major intellectual engine that drives cancer research is still academic in origin and then licensed or in other ways developed by pharmaceutical industry. And I think that we're playing with fire right now to look at a flat or decreasing NIH budget. And I think that has ramifications not only in terms of actual investigations, but the extraordinary, every day I see it as chairman of medicine, in terms of decreased enthusiasm for an academic life. People don't want a life with the level of uncertainty in terms of survival that appears to be going on. And I'm afraid we will lose a generation of the kinds of translational and clinical investigators that will be essential to driving this process forward. That would be a disgrace.
A lot of the clinical research that's actually changed practice in the last 5 or 10 years came out of the private sector. And along with that, there have been a lot of concerns about costs, particularly biologics such as bevacizumab. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that is a special and extremely important case of a widespread healthcare catastrophe which we are facing. We have 40 plus million Americans who have no health insurance. That number is likely to grow with the economic tribulations that may well be part of this country's economy in the near future. There are any number of countries which are strongly considering rationing of these very expensive therapies or even not making them available. It's a very difficult question in which you say, is it worth $100,000 a year for society to buy an average of 4 months of survival for someone? Knowing, in fact, that it's not 4 months for everyone, but a year or two for some people and nothing for a lot of other people, because that's how response rates are distributed. This is a tremendous issue. I think it's going to get worse because many of these therapies are expensive to develop, and many of them are, even when developed, expensive to manufacture. Antibody therapies have a tremendous cost of goods that may not be the same as a small molecule kinase inhibitor. But when you ferment human cells in vats, you can't make these recombinant proteins very inexpensively, though you can certainly make them for a lot less than they're currently being sold for. And I think we're going to have some kind of national debate on this as we see pharmacology playing a greater and greater role in patient care. A way that I've noticed it over the last 20 or 25 years in the part of my life that I spend as a general internist is that in the old days, patients were on 2 or 3 drugs. Now, the kinds of patients who I see admitted to the hospital who are in their 60s and 70s are rarely on less than 10. And this kind of polypharmacy not only creates a nightmare in terms of drug interactions and avoiding toxicities and unforeseen problems, but creates a gigantic societal expense. One can hope that this will be improved somewhat by paying for the kind of studies that allow you to know who will benefit.
Specifically, as it relates to bevacizumab, are there any markers that you think perhaps in the future might prove to predict response to that agent?
I would be speculating here without strong knowledge, but certainly we know that many cancers have other angiogenic molecules other than VEGF. so that if a tumor is making pleiotropin or making FGF2 or some other molecule responsible for its tumorigenesis, clearly bevacizumab won't work. That's perhaps one of the reasons why in more advanced patients, bevacizumab seems less effective than when used early. So that it may well be that looking at the array of angiogenic molecules that a given tumor is making may, and I emphasize may help to predict which patients will respond to bevacizumab. It's even possible that serum studies looking at the levels of these various angiogenic molecules in tumor patients may be of some value.